Just a heads up, the Razzball Baseball Podcast might not be for all audiences. You have been advised.
You like fantasy sports and sarcasm, then I show my mega muscle stunt spasm. It could even cause some of you to orgasm. It's a Razzball Podcast. Well, you have several choices, only one joke and yes, and I'm already a Moises. You might be yourself, just like your name was Moises. It's a Razzball Podcast. It's a Razzball Podcast. It's a Razzball Podcast. It's a Razzball Podcast. It's a Razzball Podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Razzball Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Capozzi, joined as always by Mr. Rudy Gamble and Gray Albright. And today, we will also have a special guest all the way from the arguably one of the greatest shows in the history of television, Breaking Bad. We have Miss Betsy Brandt. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show today. How are you?
Good, yeah. Woo!
Getting over my crystal meth addiction. Thank you, Breaking Bad, for making it look so attractive.
No, but it is a great show, and we know that a lot of the Razzball readers are into it, so it is my request today that we do bring that to you. However, before we get to that, we will chit-chat a little bit about baseball. So what we're going to look at today, gentlemen, is we're going to take some case studies of players who will have large movements from one year to the next on where they're going to be drafted going into 2013. So what I'd like to do is kind of go through this list, and then you guys can both take a moment and shoot back where you think we might be seeing them go going into the next season. Fair enough?
Sounds good.
Good idea, Nick.
I had to bite my lip when you said large movements.
All right. This segment is brought to you by All Brand Butts. All right. So let's go. First on the list, Mr. Cliff Lee. Arguably going into this year was a top five pitcher. I have no idea. Rudy, where do we start with Mr. Lee going into 2013?
Well, he's definitely out of first. I don't have him in my top 12. In the top of my head, so I think he's, he'll be a second, he's a second pitcher, for a staff, not necessarily the most desired one. So I'm already saying, probably seventh round is the earliest I could envision him, because that's the earliest I could picture anyone taking a second starter.
Okay. Do you think that he actually stays with the Phillies this season?
Well, I think the only team that was insane enough to take that contract is the Dodgers. Right. They've kind of priced themselves out on it. But tell you the truth, I still think there's a decent chance the Dodgers go for him. Just because if you think about their team, I mean, they have Kershaw. Is there anyone else on that pitching staff that you'd consider, Magic Johnson quality?
Canley.
I don't think so. I mean, so yeah, Bill Lindsey's probably hurt. I wouldn't be. It's the Dodgers or he's on the Phillies. I can't picture anyone else dumb enough to take a $22-23 million a year contract on a pitcher who's in his 30s.
You forgot about the team you grew up idolizing. What about the Yankees?
Nah, they've been pretty conservative on taking on salaries. So. If the Yanks have a disastrous end, and I don't know, and maybe they try to get Sabathia and Lee together again, but I'd say I'll go 50%. I know I'll go 70% Phillies, 25% Dodgers, 5% Yankees, and 0% anyone else.
Okay. But, okay, so you're taking him in the top 12. What about you, Gray?
Where am I taking him, or where do I think he's going to go?
Where do you think he's going to go?
I think he's probably going to be around 20th overall for starters. I think he might be a low number one high number two, depending on the league. I think he's probably he's best to be, you know, a high number two. But I could see him actually being a first pitcher on some teams. I think probably around what Rudy said, around 80th overall, maybe.
Okay, and just to give you some perspective, guys, or roughly the 20th overall pitcher this year would be something like CC Sabathia, Ryan Dempster, or Jordan Zimmermann, just to give you a point of reference.
You're saying in terms of... Not from ADP, from beginning of season, you're saying in terms of...
from now.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you meant from beginning of season. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, good stuff. All right, next on the list, Gray, what do you think Bryce Harper, where do you think he's going to go in...
Someone else, actually, that... Well, I don't know if the Angels have any more money, but maybe Cliff Lee could go there. What do we give him? 2% chance of going to the Angels?
I think they'd rather spend the money on Greinke if they're going to invest in starting pitching.
Yeah, maybe. And speaking of the Angels, Dan Harrens, his values really changed too. He was.
He might be on the list. Don't be spoiling. Yeah. Stay tuned. We might talk about Dan Harrens.
All right. I have an inkling that we're not going to, but okay. Bryce Harper, he. I don't know. He could be all over the map next year for different leagues. I think if he's one of those wild cards where if he has a huge spring, he could go up to fifth or sixth round in some leagues because of name value, whereas he could go down to maybe the 10th round. He's probably going to be all over the map for where you're going to end up seeing him get drafted next year. I think I would take him around the 9th round, a little bit after the 100th pick.
Yeah, he won't be available then. But I agree. I think Bryce Harper might be one of the have the most kind of deviations between where he gets picked in all leagues. I don't think Mike Trout's success this year makes it any easier. I think there might be people coming in saying Bryce Harper is going to go 30 homers, 20 stolen bases next year and get that average up. But, I feel like outfielders in their second year at that age are going to plateau. They're not going to kind of take it an extra step. I look at someone like McCutchen, who's as talented. I mean, McCutchen's one of maybe the few people on earth maybe as close to as talented as Bryce Harper. If you look at his stats, he was good his second year, but he wasn't really any better than his rookie year. It wasn't until, I think, this year that maybe he's hit that extra level. So I look at Bryce Harper as...
Sort of like Justin Upton, too.
Hey, Spoiler McGee.
What?
Zip it.
I'm just saying, no, he's saying the second year.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
I didn't even know Justin Upton was on this list.
Yeah. So I'm thinking Bryce Harper. I wouldn't want him as my first outfielder next year. You know, so I'm having him as a second outfielder. I feel like, yeah, another like kind of eighth, ninth round guy. I'd like gambling on him at that time. You know, that because he has such huge upside. But I wouldn't want to be burning an early pick on him.
Let me just ask you this: he's on pace this year for, let's say, roughly 18 homers and 16 steals. Can you see a 25-25 or maybe even 30-25 season out of him next year, Gray?
The problem is,
no.
Yeah, remember Rasmus? Yeah. Rasmus had a comparable rookie year.
He took about 3 years to get going, too.
Yeah. If Tony becomes the national manager, forget about it.
Usually, with hitters, it's about 3 years to closer to, you know, age 26, 27.
You know, it was interesting, speaking of Colby Rasmus, I went to the Jays game on Sunday, and actually there was a Montreal Expo section at the Blue Jays game, but I saw outside there's an artist who has all kinds of like caricatures of baseball players, and he had one of Colby Rasmus, and I almost bought it to send to the Rasmus girl.
You're still in touch with the Rasmus girl, then?
No.
Wait, why?
I got a cease and desist from her lawyer. She said, this guy with the mustache, keep him away.
He had such a good rapport. you knew all her lyrics.
Hey, you know what? Actually, next week's podcast can be really interesting because, Gray, you and I are going to be doing it live together at the Mustache Convention in California next week. So that's
Fun. I can't wait. Is that next week already? You're going to be in town?
Absolutely. That's next week. So
is a mustache convention? Are you growing out a mustache for this, Nick?
No, listen, I'm half Italian. I can grow a mustache in about 5 minutes.
I can actually get anyone into the mustache convention.
You got plus one.
I have indefinitely plus one.
There hasn't been a good Canadian mustache since blank. Because there's got to be a hockey player, Nick. Who has the best mustache in hockey history?
You know what?
McDonald?
Oh, my God. Yeah, you know what? Great call.
Did Dave Thomas ever have a mustache?
Dave Thomas.
Didn't play hockey. He came up
He's a burger guy. No, who's the Strange Brew guy?
Oh, you're right. That's Dave Thomas.
Oh, yeah. Dave Thomas and Rick Moranis, right?
Yeah. You're getting kicked out of Canada after this podcast. Yeah.
You know, I've never actually seen it, but that's
now you're really kicked out. Yeah, goodbye.
I know. Listen, you know, I've already been kicked out because I'm not doing a hockey podcast. I'm doing this with you knuckleheads, so.
There you go. Okay, who's next on the list?
Speaking of baseball, so here's a guy I have no idea how to evaluate, so there's probably zero chance he'll be on any of my teams next year. Mr. R.A. Dickey, Rudy. What do you think, where do you think we're going to see him go?
Yeah, I'm with you on having no idea where I should be picking him. I'd probably put him in that same bunch as, like,
Cliff Lee. I know. I know. Ooh, call on me. I know.
So I'm saying in there, I wouldn't want him before, like, the eighth round or so. Maybe he's my second starter.
What about you, Gray?
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, he's around Cliff Lee with them going in opposite directions and meeting around the eighth round. I think he's probably going to be pretty risky in the eighth round next year. But, yeah, that sounds about right. High number two.
Gray, who would you rather have, Dickey or Lee?
Lee.
Rudy?
Hmm.
Because for me, it's Cliff Lee, no question.
Yeah, I'm probably taking Cliff Lee ahead of him.
Okay.
But it would be one of those where if I end up with Dickey and Cliff Lee was off the board, I wouldn't be too upset.
So you wound up with Dickey? What?
Yep.
At the mustache convention?
He woke up one night. What is that?
Yeah. And I can think of all these great team names that involve Dickey in the name.
All right, next on the list is someone who we didn't even know if he'd be getting regular at-bats this year, and he has been one of the top power hitters in the major leagues, and that would be Mr. Mark Trumbo. Where's he going next year, Gray?
I think even if he continues to crash land in September, he's probably accumulated enough stats to this point where he's going to be drafted around the fifth or sixth round. I'd say Trumbo and Hosmer this year, kind of like similar, where I think Trumbo's still going to have, I mean, the sociopath, he always worries me. So if you have Trumbo and he goes and has a terrible April, there's a chance he loses at bats next year, even after having this great year this year. Right. So he's going to be a concern, but I think he's going to go around the fifth or sixth round.
Yeah, I think the chance. I'm looking at his games played, and he's at 18 games for first base. And I think if he has first base right now, he's got outfield, and he won't get third base. Even in Yahoo leagues, I don't think he's played third since May. And so if he's outfield only, I think that's a bit limiting. First base outfield to me is kind of a nice add because we saw this year first base is a tougher position to fill than it feels like it had been in previous years. So if he has first base, I like him more. I don't like him in fifth, sixth round, but he'll end up there because all first basemen kind of get lifted up there. If he's just outfield, I think, you know, maybe he's sixth, seventh round. And from a stats perspective, I see it as he's kind of poor man's Adam Dunn. I feel like he's a 30 homer guy who's not going to hit for good average. Is the way I say it. I think he's a 250 hitter.
Okay.
If you had to project him.
Fair enough. Next on the list is brand new LA Dodger Adrian Gonzalez. We didn't have Gray on to discuss the whole Dodger Boston trade. I don't know if you guys want to rehash that, but how do you think he's going to do in Chavez Ravine next year, Gray?
I don't think that's really going to change anything with him. He was just hitting too many ground balls. He's not hitting homers in any park if he hits as many ground balls as he was hitting. I think the bigger concern will be his average. He's not going to be able to bounce balls off of the Green Monster in Dodger Stadium.
Obviously.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I'm saying that's going to hurt his average, right? Yeah.
What about you, Rudy?
Well, I had him as a definite first rounder going into this year with the assumption that his shoulder issues were the reason for his homer outage last year. I think he slips towards second, third round. I like him a lot in that area. I'm not convinced that he's not a 30 home run hitter, maybe not 40. And he should be a 290-ish hitter. I like him as kind of a second, third round bounce back candidate.
Okay, let's take a quick second, and I'd like just for the audience to hear what your thoughts are on that whole Dodger-Boston trade, gentlemen. Gray, what do you think?
Didn't we just go over this?
It was arguably the biggest salary dump in the history. I know this is not fantasy-related, but it's arguably the biggest salary dump in maybe even the history of sports.
I don't understand non-fantasy-related baseball. I'm a savant. I think actually on a related note, because this has been hashed over, and it's been talked about on the blog, and it's over 2 weeks now. I think on a related note, though, it was interesting to watch the Red Sox and Mariners last night, because the Mariners lineup actually looked as potent as the Red Sox lineup. Red Sox are a complete mess. So right now, there's no for the first time in maybe 15 years, you could stream pitchers against the Red Sox, and I wouldn't be as concerned.
So, okay, let me rephrase the question then for you, Rudy. Is there going to be any kind of fantasy goodness coming out of that Red Sox lineup next year, or is that just something, a team you're going to try and avoid?
No, I mean, you still got Pedroia there.
Who's going to drive him in?
Middlebrooks. Ryan Kalish.
Salty.
He's Kalish.
He's Salty Kalish.
It does look going to be pretty bad. I'd like to see what they do in the offseason. If it's just relying on prospects like Bogarts, I don't think it's going to be too bullish. I do think they're going to fire Valentine. They haven't by the time we're talking right now, and they could do it like any minute. I do think they're going to make some type of free agent, buy or two.
But who? There's no one out there this season.
Josh Hamilton.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I have no idea. I don't know. I'm going to say, we'll see. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. They might make trades. They might do something. Right now it looks like a pretty...
I could see them trading for Justin Upton.
Yeah.
The Diamondbacks want to get rid of Upton so badly.
Yeah.
They could give up Jose Iglesias.
He can't field. He can't hit.
I just like saying Jose Iglesias.
No, it sounds...
To all the pitches I've missed before.
Yes. So, yeah, I think it was a smart trade for Boston that they had basically a failed expensive team, and they could be a failed inexpensive team for a year.
Okay, next up on the list is, talk about a failed experiment, from the Miami Marlins, Jose Reyes. Gray, where do you think Jose is going to wind up next year?
Right now he's at 280, 11 homers, and 33 steals. So if he gets 1240, is he that? I mean, at 280, I don't think he's that bad at shortstop. He didn't earn his value. Actually, I looked at the our Rasball player rater, and only one shortstop currently is above $20 in value. I think I think at your draft there was probably at least four, maybe five shortstops that went for more than $20.
So, yeah, he's definitely, I mean, the shortstop position's a mess. Reyes was definitely disappointing, but a bomb, probably not. And I'd say he goes probably in the fourth round next year.
Okay, yeah, what about you?
I'm looking at the player rater. Yeah, I had him at $22 going into the season. He's performed at about 20. But there's no, he was picked in the second round. He's not delivered second round value. It has been brutal for shortstops. I mean, Tulowitzki, Hanley, Ramirez. I don't, you know, and Hanley still is the best shortstop this year.
Hey, is it me or did Rudy's balls just shrink? you're sounding a bit pitchy.
Oh. All right, Randy Jackson.
Yeah, I'm not taking. I'm thinking Reyes is like. I'd want him in like fifth round. He'll probably go in third round.
Okay.
Most leagues.
So guys, here's what we'll do. Just because we want to get to the Betsy Brandt interview, I'm going to give you three more names. We'll do kind of a quick hit. Just a quick sentence on each guy. So three more on this list of where will they go in 2013. Gray, first up, Jason Kipnis.
At the All-Star break, he looked like he was going to move into this around sixth round, but now he's probably around eighth or ninth. I'd say similar to Astrubal from 2011 to 2012, like similar sort of thing, where he has a good year, but he's still in the eighth round.
What about you, Rudy?
I think I'd rather in the eighth round, but I think he's going to go in the fifth or sixth round. It's going to be, it's just a, it's pretty weak on the middle infield front.
Okay, great.
I mean, second base is stronger, but I think there's still going to be a run on middle infield like there usually is.
Great. What about your the guy who killed you in so many leagues this year, Eric Hosmer? I got a feeling we might be getting some emails in 2013 from Eric from Kansas City.
I can't wait. In friendly office leagues where people just look at last year's stats, I could see Hosmer being drafted around where Encarnacion was this year, like barely, if at all, or maybe the last five rounds. In smarter leagues, probably around maybe 180 overall.
Okay. What about you?
He went from a first baseman to now he's a cornerman play. I think probably like in the 130, 140 range. It matters where all the projections come in. But I think he's going to be too tempting to take as a bounce back candidate. And he doesn't have like Morgo concussion syndrome. So.
Okay. And the last guy on our list today is
Dan Haran.
No, you know what? Dan didn't crack the list. Justin Upton. Jay Up, Gray.
I think he's probably going to go in the third round, and I'm going to be all over him. Giddy Upton, because he's highly.
What about you, Rudy?
Yeah, I mean, he should be able to be second round value, but yeah. So I just think people are going to be a bit scared if he stays in Arizona. I think a third round play, once you have maybe 5 to 7 outfielders off the board, that'd be solid.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do now, gentlemen, for because we do have Betsy Brandt again from Breaking Bad, who is going to come on and have a quick chat with us. Now, in case you don't know this, Rudy, when he's not being a fantasy a statistical genius, he's also a judge for the Emmys. So he can't be on for the Betsy interview. So Gray will take us through and a great opportunity here to chit-chat with Miss Betsy, a big fan of Razzball Nation. So without further ado, let's get to it. All right, Razzball Nation, you asked for it, and we've brought it to you. All the way from Breaking Bad, it is with great honor that we introduce today Ms. Betsy Brandt. Betsy, welcome to the Razzball Baseball Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I assure you.
Am I the first Breaking Bad person you have?
You are. You're actually our first choice, too.
Well, listen, I am a trendsetter, and the rest of them will follow now.
We all love the color purple, so we had to have you on.
Well, listen, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Do you get a lot of gag gifts from friends that are, like, buying you purple sweaters now?
No. I really try to limit the purple in my personal life. And I have nothing against the color. It's just like, you know, it's just too much. It's just too much because it's just like, I feel like it's bringing work home with me.
Yeah, I can understand that. You probably don't want to bring that character home either.
No. It's like, she's fine where she is. I love her. Don't get me wrong. I totally love her. Once in a while, if there's something that I'm like, oh my God, I should get that. I actually have, while we're shooting, I like to have my toenails in some sort of purple shade. I like to get a pedicure in some sort of purple shade. But then I really am like, oh my God, I don't want to go around with all these bubble stuff. Now, did I lose you?
No. You're still here.
Oh, okay.
No.
That, are you sending me a fax?
No. You know what that was?
I told you. It's like the Wayne's World, the podcast.
Okay.
We're in the basement somewhere, and we're on the seat of our pants. We're flying. Go with us.
Is this illegal? You're like, drug problem? Okay. It's funny. I did a play last fall, and when they called to get my sizes and stuff for costumes, they said, you know, is there any issues? Do you have any, you know, allergies or anything? And I said, no. I said, I would prefer, you know, I said, this is not a deal breaker, but I would prefer that you don't put me in purple. And I had like four costumes, I think, in that show. And the one that I wore the most was this vintage dress that they found, and it was purple. So they put me in that in purple tights, and I said, you know, now people are going to think that, you know, I request this. Like, I, you know, it's in my contract for people, you know, you have to pick out the brown M&Ms, but for me, I'm like, I must have purple on in this production.
And then the play director caught you reaching into someone else's pocketbook and stealing something.
I mostly don't steal in life.
Mostly don't, yeah.
What's the last thing
you stole in real life?
A spoon. I steal small spoons.
The little collector spoons?
No, nothing fancy. Just like little spoons.
Spoons that have sentimental value to the person that has the spoon.
I steal spoons that have sentimental value to me. Like, if I'm having a good meal, I'm like, oh, I'm going to take that spoon. I was having breakfast with, I've told this story before, but I was having breakfast with Tom Snow, one of our writers, when he was in town for his episode. And we went out to breakfast, and I stole a small spoon from the meal, and then I wrapped it up like a present and gave it to him at work. Apparently, I think they should be special to other people, too.
So do you clean the spoons after you steal them, or just leave them as
well? Well, it's usually something that I've used. You know, it's usually one that I've used, but, oh, yeah, no, I steal them. No, that's gross to, like, have cold milk or, like, creme brulee on a spoon and, like, have it around your house. No, I use them. I have a little collection of small spoons that I use.
That's awesome. Do you have them in a little glass case? Like,
no, I'm not that organized. I'm not that organized. But people will steal them for me, too. And that's kind of special. You know, like, hey, I went to Italy. I stole you this really fantastic small spoon.
You know, you just enabled your friends to be cheap about what gifts they bring you.
I'm okay with that.
Just bring your spoon.
I'm low maintenance that way. I don't require a lot.
Let's see. Oh, I wanted to. You mentioned this briefly just before that you love the character. I think you have to as an actress, right?
I feel that way. I mean, I think if you're playing a serial killer, like, you've got to find. Otherwise, you're not human. You know.
Right. Yeah. Totally. So I just wanted to compliment you real quick before we go any further. I thought you captured a character that is really unlikable, but in a way that makes it not only likable, but you can understand how Hank is in love and how what he finds redeemable. And I think that's really difficult. And I just
wanted to congratulate
you on that. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, I thought it would be fun, you know, from the beginning to play the difficult one. I thought that would be fun. And, you know, Bryan Cranston kind of warned me about it. He was like, you know, you got to be careful because, you know, don't embrace it too much because, you know, and you can do that with movies, but on TV it's tougher to be the bad guy. And she's not the bad guy. And it's funny, our villains, you know, are pretty likable. Like, I mean, how bad was Gus Fring? But don't you just love him?
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, you just, you're like, oh my God. And then, and it's so funny too. Like, I look at Mike and, you know, it seemed like, Mike, is it okay to talk about spoilers? Because I don't want to ruin anything for anybody.
No,
talk
about spoilers.
No, okay, no, seriously, like, because some people, I don't know where you're, you know, it's like you have a lot of people in Brazil who watch, and they don't get to watch it until next week or something.
Yeah. We have a huge billion readership.
Well, when Mike died, I was like, you know, it's funny because, you know, just let me die in peace, and you really want that for Mike. But Mike would kill almost anybody and not bat an eye. I mean, he is right. That guy. He's, you know, but you kind of still feel like you want to invite him over for Thanksgiving dinner, even though you might not be alive by the end of the meal. I mean, it depends, you know, but yeah. It's funny how likable he became to us, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
I could not have watched
it. But... You want to tell us how next season goes?
I got no.
Put out season 6 for us.
I mean, I could lie, but I don't have anything for real. But one more thing about Mike, I could not, and I don't know if I've said this to anybody, I could not have watched them put Mike in a barrel. Like, that would have been too much for me as a viewer.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to kind of have an understanding of the show, because if you just tune in mid-interview here, talk about putting Mike in the barrel.
I know, that could be like a new... You know, like, instead of, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to put your ass in a barrel. This is a new thing to say to people. Let's try and start that. I'm going to say that to my kids if they don't go to bed tonight.
That's going to be trending on Twitter before the night's done.
In a barrel.
But your kids have to put a hashtag in front of it.
Right.
Hey, you know what's interesting? Also, both you, Betsy, and Gray both studied at Harvard. I found that interesting because Gray doesn't come off as a...
I was like, you know, got in through like the back door, and I have gotten in and dropped out of some really wonderful colleges in the United States and abroad too. I was there for just a summer, so I don't have a degree from there or anything. And I was going to go to graduate school there, and then I started working, and so I decided not to go.
Well, actually,
you
spend more.
I ended up going to the University of Phoenix. I'm a Phoenix.
Oh,
no, I'm not.
You rise from the ashes.
I totally respect. Yeah, I like the mascot.
You rise from the ashes like a phoenix. I like that.
Yes, the. So in the beginning, your character, when you started, was there any sort of outline as to any sort of, like, the place this was going to go, or did you have to leave, like, a lot of room to breathe, or did you just bring what you thought would eventually make sense? Because I can imagine, like, in a series like this, there's so many layers, you're not getting it all in the beginning. You're not drafting even your own character.
Well, it's a group effort. It's definitely a group effort. And so I would say both. But, you know, season one, Vince was in Albuquerque. Now that, you know, the writers are back in California and they write here and then they come out. Actually, we still see them more than we do most writers on shows that I work on in L.A. And they're, you know, they come out for their episode and, you know, they're just... I can't imagine doing a show without a writer on set the whole time. So, you know, Vince was around, and I would ask him, you know, I'd ask him a lot of questions because we'd always have a different, you know, almost always have a different director at that point. And, you know, unless Vince was directing it, I said, you know, I just want to make sure we're on the same page, and I'm, like, you know, going to, you know, when we shoot this, that I'm, you know, going to accomplish in that scene what you want me to, because hopefully, you know, the decisions we make now are decisions we live with, you know, like three seasons down the road. I remember saying three seasons down the road, and now we're getting ready to do a sixth season.
It's going to be difficult because it's like when you're making pizza, you put the dough out, you put the sauce, you put the cheese, you put the pepperoni, and then season three, you're like, wait, I want burrata instead of mozzarella, and now I'm stuck with the mozzarella.
Right, and you're like, you know what? Fuck it, let's go for the truffle. Let's go for the truffle oil. Let's put the truffle oil on
everything.
There. Sony can afford the truffle oil.
You got the truffle oil.
Yeah, like then you're just at a whole new level.
Right. Yeah, wow, you're in a fancy place. I see being on a hit show has really done well for you.
Oh, you're
in trouble on pizza. Look at
you. Yeah, we live large at my house.
Betsy, I'm just curious.
My kids are eating French toast for dinner.
Besides going to the supermarket draped in fur and diamonds, how has your life changed at all, being a series regular?
It's funny that you asked me that. I don't know why I was thinking about this today, but before, you know, I did a fair amount of television. I would do guest stars and some recurring stuff, you know. And people would recognize me sometimes, but more I would get, like, people thought they knew me. Like, they would recognize my face, you know, but not know how they knew me. And I remember being at a wedding in the Midwest. It was a friend of my husband's. And I used to think this was really funny. Like, you know, if a guy was like, "She looks really familiar," I'm like, "Mm-hmm." Watch a lot of porn, do you? But now, like, people pretty much, you know, they're like, "Oh, Marie from Breaking Bad." Like, they, you know, they know how they know me, and you know, so I can't get away with that so much. I also used to, I like to take Hollywood bus tours of Hollywood and pretend that I'm not from here. Like a freak.
Oh my God, you're the person that's on that bus.
And now, oh no, there are other people. I just like to blend right in with them. But, you know, now I told my husband, like, I would like you to do that with me. He's like, I really don't think you, he's like, someone's going to recognize you. I really don't think, I think those days are gone. Where I actively, I'm like, is that the Scientology Center? Are those people Scientologists out front? I mean, that's kind of done. But then, like, that said, like, if I'm, like, I had an audition for, I don't want to say which show it was, but, and I was reading with the star of the show, and he's great, and a fan of Breaking Bad, and really sweet, and I've met him. But then the producer, like, writer of the show had no idea who I was, and it really threw me off, where, like, you know, before Breaking Bad, or even a few years into the beginning of Breaking Bad, when we didn't have that many viewers, you know, that wouldn't have, you know, thrown me off at all. I was like, wait, he doesn't, oh my God, God, maybe they're not seriously considering me for this if he doesn't know who I am anyway. So that, those are my big changes. Can't do the Hollywood tour. Can't do a porn joke. And
it sounds like you're still on the plus side for the
totally on the plus side. Like, there's things that I can't do, like, so, like, honestly, I have to say, it for me, it's really great. And I don't, you know, this is the only hit show I've been on, so I don't know if it's like this for other people, but I really, you know, like, I just look at our fans as part of the team, because, you know, I joke and say, you know, like, how we're the little show that could, and we really are. And I mean, without our fans, two things could happen. If we had other fans, they have to write a different show for those fans. So I'm glad we have the fans that we do. And then the other thing is like, they're just, you know, I think they're gutsy and they're great and they're smart. And, you know, I feel really lucky, because if we didn't have an audience, I'd have a different job.
Well, Betsy, I have to tell you, it's also the Razzball fans that were insistent that we got you on the show. So your fans and our fans seem to have some sort of cohesion.
Good taste.
Yes. Good taste. Truffle oil and porn jokes. That's pretty much our core demographic.
That's your demographic.
Betsy, I'm just curious.
That is not a personal ad on, like, a dating site. I don't know what it is. What do I enjoy? Truffle oil and porn jokes. Who wouldn't go out with that person?
Fantasy sports and masturbation go hand in hand.
That's right. Betsy.
You get it.
Betsy, is there anything else you're working on these days? Anything else that where we can find you?
Right now, I'm, we're getting ready for the Emmys. I'm hoping to do, I'm actually taking meetings, you know, looking for a job post-Breaking Bad, which is bittersweet for me. But I don't, knock on wood, that I'll get something that I want. But, you know,
how about co-hosting a podcast?
I was going to say, we need a fantasy hockey writer.
Oh, you know what? This is embarrassing. I should be a good hockey. I should know a lot about hockey because I'm from Michigan, but I don't. I don't. I mean, I'm happy to play along, but I just don't.
You didn't like purple before Breaking Bad either, right?
I didn't like what?
purple.
Purple. No, I had nothing against purple, but I didn't. I certainly didn't have the relationship that I have with it now.
All right, listen.
I may end up doing Rob Corddry's show, Children's Hospital,
if
we can work it out. And if we do, I will let you know, which I'm so excited. I think he's so funny. So funny.
Listen,
good luck with the Emmys, too. This is your year.
Oh, thank you. Honestly, if you know anybody that you can bribe or threaten to make that happen for us, please do.
Rudy, that's what Rudy's an Emmy voter. That's why he couldn't be on.
My God, I would have totally kissed his ass.
we'll have you guys talk later. You guys can figure something out.
Okay. Or he could send me some truffle oil because he didn't make it on today.
Betsy, we really appreciate having you on today. Really, it was a treat for us.
Oh, my God. You guys, thank you for having me. It was so great to chat with you. And thanks for watching the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We can't wait for the next season to roll out.
Oh, my God. You and me both. You and me both.
You know what? I don't usually watch the Emmys, but my wife does. But I assure you, I will sit down on the couch with her with a big bag.
Yeah, sit down on the couch with her and watch. And have your fancy truffle spread and whatever else you want, beverage of choice, and tell her I have a beautiful dress I'm wearing.
Perfect. All right,
and,
Betsy.
Have a great night, you guys, and thanks for chatting.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and all the best.
Take care.
Thanks to executive producer Scott Brown and the staff at Glenmore Records. If you ever need great recording studios in the city of Toronto, visit glenmorerecords.com. And a special thank you to Symphony of Nine for the greatest podcast intro song ever.
It's a Rock Ball Podcast. It's a Rock Ball Podcast.